Hi, my name is Harold Horgan, CEO of the York Group. For more than 20 years, we have been working with ISVs to help them develop and implement their business strategies. One of the biggest challenges facing ISVs today is adapting their business model to cloud-based technologies being sold on a subscription basis. We have worked with thousands of ISVs worldwide, giving us a unique insight into the issues you have to deal with. Microsoft has asked me to share our experiences through this series of webinars. There are a total of 11 modules covering almost every aspect of the cloud business model, and combined they are intended to give the guidance you need to be successful in the cloud. This is one of three webinars on channel development. The other two modules cover channel fundamentals and a 10-step partner recruitment process. In this webinar, we will start with a topic that is near and dear to a partner's heart. What margin do they get? Another important and sometimes emotional issue is client ownership. Who does the billing? What are the marketing support programs you should be prepared to offer? Regular, effective communications are important. Out of sight is out of mind. Don't let them forget you. And finally, we will give you some guidelines for evaluating partner performance and when it makes sense to get rid of them. Let's jump straight in with partner margins or discounts, since both you and your partner need to make money out of this. The traditional partner discount for on-premise software is 40%. Have you ever wondered why? It is a question we often get from clients who are new to channels. Why should we pay resellers 40% or 50% margins when we only pay our salespeople 8 or 10% commissions? In the standard model, you get 60% of the list price, regardless of what the partner sells it for. If the partner needs to offer a customer a discount to get a deal done, that's their problem. Now, think about your business model and profit expectations. Most ongoing successful software companies build a budget that produces a pre-tax profit of 15 to 20%. There are exceptions to this, but this is a pretty standard calculation. Well, guess what? Resellers want to make a profit too. Probably not 15 to 20%, but they need to make money to survive. So the way the 40% partner discount breaks down is the following. They get 20% to cover the sales and marketing costs. If you look at your own P&L, you probably spend a lot more than that as a percentage of revenues. They get another 20% to cover their overhead and profit margin. This is why referral fees tend to be in the 10 to 20% range. A partner doesn't invest in sales and marketing, so this is money that falls directly to the bottom line. The key here is that you shouldn't pay them for what they don't do. The reality is that most partners don't invest in sales and marketing. They want you to do the lead generation for them, in which case you shouldn't be paying them 40%. This equation also explains why a 30% margin isn't very effective. It doesn't give the partner enough to cover their costs, so you are better off with two tiers, 10 to 20% for partners that rely on you to do the marketing for them, and 40% or more for those that are self-sufficient. What happens to your partner discounts when you move to the cloud? With payments coming in the form of subscriptions, is there enough margin to keep everyone happy? Vendors usually look at the equation from their own perspective and decide that they can't afford 40%, so they go to their partners with an offer of 20 to 25% and sometimes less for renewals. For the partners, it comes down to simple math. If they have been selling software with a list price of $100,000 and 20% maintenance, they get $48,000 when they close the deal. Now, looking at the same transaction but from a subscription basis, the typical conversion pricing leads to an annual payment of $53,000 with maintenance included. If the partner is lucky enough to get a 40% margin from you and they can collect the first year up front, they get $21,000. This is why, given the choice, partners will almost always push the on-premises version. Even if they were to get a 40% margin on renewals, it would take them almost 3 years before they collect the same amount they would for selling an on-premise plus maintenance for 3 years. In presenting a financial model to prospective partners, the margin from subscription sales alone will not make you a compelling proposition. So you pitch them on the classic reasons for selling SaaS. More revenues over time. This is, after all, a recurring revenue model, so the $21,000 we used in our example would be paid out every year if the partner maintains a 40% discount, so eventually this produces a longer and better revenue stream. More deals. SaaS products typically have a shorter sales cycle, so partners should be able to close more sales without investing in additional salespeople. Higher deal velocity means more revenues and profits. Services. For many SaaS solutions sold into the enterprise space, the services component will be more or less the same as with on-premise solutions. So add this in with the higher deal velocity and they can make a lot more money from services. But even with this, it can be tough to get the partners to look past the initial margin when the deal closes. The best argument is better street prices. Although the nominal discount for on-premise software may be 40 to 50%, price negotiations will normally result in a much lower street price and a lower margin on license sales for partners. In some cases, the actual margin may only be 10 to 15%, with partners willing to reduce the price in order to generate services revenues. SaaS pricing is less likely to be discounted. As an example, if a partner gives a customer a 20% discount from list for on-premise, the net margin is only $20,000 plus the maintenance. All of a sudden, the margin in absolute dollars is much closer to that of SaaS, and now the other arguments of recurring revenues, higher deal velocity, and more services have more impact. We have an industry standard for on-premise software. What is the industry best practice for SaaS? There isn't one. As you will see from the next slide, margins are all over the board, and unlike on-premise software, a standard model has not yet emerged. These are margins offered by a number of different SaaS vendors, and as you can see from these examples, there is no consistent margin program being offered today. We can use two examples to illustrate this. The first is a well-known SaaS ERP vendor that offers his partners two options for a contract with a minimum duration of 2 years. The partner can get 50% of the first year subscription and 30% for the life of the relationship, not just the contract term, but all renewals, or 100% of the first year and 10% of all renewals. They are effectively offering their partners the same margin in absolute dollars from the first year of a subscription as they would get from selling an on-premise equivalent. At the other extreme is a sales tax add-on for ERP systems. The vendor provides a 20% margin in year one and 10% on renewals, but only as long as the partner sells at least one new subscription per year. Otherwise, they stop getting the residual. So as you can see, margin programs range from 100% of the first year to not very much. The important thing to remember is that partners, like salespeople, will go where the money is, and you have to structure partner compensation in a way that motivates them to sell your product. This is one of the most emotional issues for partners. They don't want to give up client control and let you sign directly with their clients. In deciding who has a relationship, we look at who is doing what. If the partner provides the ongoing support, handles the billing and the collection, and sells the renewals, they should own the relationship. We'll talk more about what happens in the event of termination in the webinar on legal issues. This is another good place to make a distinction between referral partners and traditional resellers. Referral partners should never own the relationship, while resellers usually will. But there is an important thing for you to consider when resellers own the relationship. You will probably need to provide the billing engine. Channel partners rarely have the resources to set up a billing and provisioning system of their own. It is typically provided by a vendor or the distributor. We discussed this in the webinar on cloud fundamentals, and there are a number of third-party systems that you can use. In the webinar on partner recruitment, we emphasize the importance of having partners commit to investing in their own marketing plans. But that doesn't mean that you do not provide any marketing support whatsoever. There are typically four pillars of marketing. Of these, lead generation clearly belongs to the partner. If they are getting the higher discounts, they should take the lead in driving leads. You would still send them leads that come in from your other marketing. The three areas that you will be responsible for are corporate marketing. This is what you do to create awareness for your product, regardless of how you go to market. This could be PR, search engine optimization, advertising, whatever. Product marketing is everything you have to support your solution. White papers, positioning papers, product data sheets, training programs, materials, scripted demos, etc. And finally, you should be marketing to your partners to keep them engaged. In many ways, they are your customer. This includes your partner management programs, partner portals, annual sales meeting, incentives, and rewards. Another area in which you will want to support your partners is marketing automation. Like a billing system, this is something that many partners can't do on their own, where you provide the scale that partners can benefit from. Now, to one of the most effective marketing tools for SaaS solutions. The most powerful word in marketing is free. One of the things that really shortens the sales cycle for a lot of SaaS products is a 30-day free trial. Try before you buy. Your objective is to get as many people as possible to try the product, fall in love with it, and sign up for a subscription. And for most products, this is so much easier with online solutions. If you have a solution that lends itself to a free trial, do it. But there are some basic rules to making them successful. The trial version has to be self-service and easy to use. If it requires live data to be uploaded, or there is risk that someone will get lost trying to navigate through the solution, free trials might not work. It needs to be a full function product so the prospect can see what they get. If there are limitations during the free trial period, such as limited storage, a maximum number of documents or records, explain what the limitations are and that they will be removed in the paid version. Free trials are typically 30 days, but we are seeing a trend to reducing this to 14 days, the idea being that if they haven't started using it in 14 days, they won't use it in 30 days. Communicate, communicate, communicate during the free trial period, whether it is by email, online chat, or phone support. If not, your conversion rate to paid subscriptions will be very low. And finally, make it easy to pay for the subscription. If they have entered personal information to activate the free trial, such as their name, address, phone number, transfer this into the billing fields automatically. The biggest killer of channel programs is channel conflict. The first time a partner loses a deal to you or to another partner, they are likely to stop investing their own money in marketing. With the increased ways of selling online solutions such as marketplaces, affiliate marketing, and so on, it is essential to have clear rules of engagement and sticking to them. A classic way to avoid channel conflict is through lead registration. A lot of partners are paranoid and won't participate, but it can be effective. Just make sure that you keep it simple so that it isn't time-consuming, and never, ever share a lead with other partners. We also recommend that you put a 90-day limit on a registration to avoid partners registering hundreds of prospects they hope to sell to one day just to lock them in. You can always extend the registration period if there's an ongoing sales process. Another way to keep partners from competing with each other directly is to create clear market segments. Market segmentation can improve your market coverage because you will be able to identify markets where you are underrepresented. We have also found that most partners have a focus on specific vertical markets. They speak the language of healthcare or manufacturing or retail, so it makes marketing more effective. There are many ways to segment a market. Just make sure you don't over-segment. The classic approach is by geography, but you can also segment by vertical market, SMB and enterprise accounts, or if you have multiple products, through certification for specific products. You will never be able to eliminate conflict, but you can minimize it. Now, let's look at a couple of marketing support programs that are used by many vendors, especially in the United States. Market Development Funds, or MDF, is a good way to support the efforts of channel partners. It is usually done on a co-op basis. By that I mean both parties participate in the cost of approved marketing initiatives. This is particularly effective when it is tied to the marketing plan. You, the vendor, set aside a percentage of the revenues that you get from a partner, generally 3 to 5% of purchases. So if a partner purchases $100,000 from you, you would put $3,000 to $5,000 into the MDF program for that partner. For approved expenses, it can be paid out to the partner, but in most cases, it is handled as an extra discount against future purchases. You need to make it easy for the partner to spend money promoting your product. If it's too restrictive or too many forms to be filled out, they won't bother. Some partners don't need to spend a lot of money on marketing. They're selling to their existing clients. If that is the case, let them use MDF to cover the cost of training additional people on your product. SPIFs are cash payments directly to a salesperson for a sale. They have always been common in the hardware industry, where a salesperson gets, for example, $20 for each box sold. But they are increasingly used for software and in some cases for expensive solutions. SPIFs are most common in the US. There are some countries where they can't be used, either for tax reasons or cultural reasons. While SPIFs are usually tied to a sale, for products with a longer sales cycle, they can be paid for generating qualified leads. In the US and the UK, they are so common that banks issue debit cards that vendors give to salespeople. Then they simply make deposits directly to the card when SPIFs have been earned. SPIFs are normally tied to short-term goals or initiatives, such as introducing a new product or moving into a new market. Now, some of you outside the US probably think this sounds like a bribe. It isn't, because you always get the approval of the management first. In the US, business owners often ask vendors to provide spiffs because it is a form of compensation for their salespeople that doesn't come out of the owner's pocket. The key to any successful relationship is good communications, and this is true for channel partnerships as well. In too many cases, it is a one-way communications process with the vendor constantly pushing the partners to sell more, sell more. Good communication should encourage and enable the partner to be more successful. One of the best tools to make it easier for you to support a lot of partners and for the partners to sell more of your products while being self-sufficient is a partner portal. The purpose is to build a community of reseller salespeople, channel managers, and even customers, and to reduce the human interaction for administrative tasks. The more you can automate your channel processes, the more partners you can support without adding additional headcount. There are four primary areas that a portal or a partner relationship management system should be able to support. First, marketing. It can be a repository for marketing materials, it can track leads generated by specific programs, can manage MDF, and so on. Lead and sales management. Track leads registered by resellers and leads from yourself all the way through the sales cycle. Ideally, the partner portal is integrated with your back-end accounting or ERP system so that they can place their orders and make their payments here too. Technical support and training. This could include e-learning, FAQs, automated trouble ticket tracking, and online communities. The ideal partner portal will manage the entire lifecycle of a sale, from lead registration to pipeline reporting to order processing and finally technical support. In the webinar on channel fundamentals, I spoke about the importance of making the relationship accountable, and monthly reporting is an element of this. There's just one little problem. Partners hate them. They will tell you it is because they would rather be spending their time selling than filling out forms, but the real reason is that they don't trust you. They think that you will sell directly to their prospects or that you might share the information with other partners. Nonetheless, pipeline reports should be a requirement. But keep it simple and only ask them to enter qualified prospects into the pipeline report, maybe when they are 30 or 40% likelihood of closing. There can also be a benefit to the partner. It helps you help them with their sales. If you have a solution with a long sales cycle and you can see that a sale has stalled, it gives you a chance to be proactive. Sometimes it is a pricing issue or a technical issue and the partner couldn't be bothered to contact you for help. Unfortunately, no matter how good your recruitment program was, not every partner is going to work out. You should have an objective way to review and measure their performance and in some cases be prepared to terminate them. There should be an annual review process, not just jumping up and down at the end of the year telling them that they should have done more. It really is part of building a true partnership, giving you an opportunity to learn more about their business. By getting a better understanding of their business and all of the factors that impact it, such as competition and the local economy, it puts you in a position to jointly plan how you can develop and grow the business. Too many times the annual review process is, did Johan hit his numbers? Well, what do you do if he didn't? How do you take the right corrective action if you don't understand his business and his market and if you can't measure his performance against other partners? This is where scorecards come in, putting in place a set of metrics that makes it easier to measure and compare performance. Scorecards can include many different factors, but you want to make sure you capture past performance, what the potential is with that partner, and the level of commitment they have to you. The larger your network of partners, the more important it is to classify them. We have found that partners generally fall into four categories. First, partners with low performance but high potential. This is often the case with partners that also represent a competitor and do more business with a competitive product. If you can get them to switch their focus, it would result in a large increase in sales through that partner. High performance and high potential. This is the group that really considers you to be strategic. They are already performing at a high level, but continue to reinvest to grow sales for your solution. Co-investing with these partners pays big dividends. High performance, low potential partners can be the most frustrating ones to work with. You like them because they are producing good sales, but they have no interest in spending more of their time and resources to grow your sales. There isn't much you can do with them other than manage and maintain the relationship. No need for further investment or corrective action. The last and often the largest group of partners are the ones that aren't selling, have no desire to sell, and have little potential to improve. You have a couple of choices with these partners. You can either terminate them outright or downgrade them to referral partners, reducing their discount, and then just forget about them. When you do make the decision to terminate a partner, there are some things to keep in mind. There has to be a breach of the contract, such as non-performance, non-payment, selling a competitive product, etc. If they have been a performing partner but they missed their targets this year, find out why. That is one of the reasons for having an on-site annual review. You can learn more about what impacts their business. Did they lose a salesperson? Is the local economy hurting? If they are still selling, just not hitting their targets, it might be very difficult to replace them. There's no guarantee that a new partner would do any better. In some cases, you will find that you are stuck with a partner that does okay, just not as well as you would like. If you do terminate the agreement, make very sure that you follow the contract. It can be very easy for an upset partner to sue you. In some markets, you could be liable for damages even if the partner is being terminated for non-performance. There are countries where the court will assume that the partner is invested to create awareness for your product and award them damages for lost revenues. So let's summarize some of the key learnings from this session. Finding the right level of margin to provide your partners can be difficult with subscription models, but at the end of the day, partners need to be profitable or they will stick to selling on-premise solutions. Client ownership is an important issue for resellers. If they are doing the billing, providing the support, and are responsible for getting renewals, they will want to own the relationship. You want the partner to be responsible for lead generation, but you still need to provide other levels of marketing support, including market development funds. A partner portal or partner relationship management software can really help you communicate with and manage your partners. And finally, even the best partner programs will have partners that don't perform. Have a process in place to evaluate them objectively, terminate the underachievers, and focus your attention on the partners with the best performance and the best potential for growth. So thank you for taking the time to view this webinar. As mentioned during the introduction, it is part of a series of webinars that Microsoft has put together to help you be successful with your cloud solution. So I would encourage you to view other webinars that cover topics that are relevant to you. You should also feel free to contact me if there are any questions or issues that I can help with.